I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Well, that was the screams you heard in Brussels this morning. Over in Belgium, you know, the headquarters for the EU? You could hear that scream all the way to Moscow and all the way to Washington, D.C., man. That was an upset. For it seems like the working class pulled it off over there in Britannia. Some of the news is talking about it quite a bit, but others are not talking about it too much. The U.S. press didn't know what to do. They didn't know whether to poop or go blind. But over there in England and in some of the European broadcasts and the Russian TV, you could see that it was really in large part due to the white working class. I think they said mainly in northern England that brought this about. You see, there's a growing symbiotic relationship between certain elements of the left and the right. And it's merging in what we should see as populism. And populism's fine. The liberals hate it. The conservatives hate it. So it must not be too bad. But back in the early part of the last century, the Klan liked it. The farmers liked it. The Grange liked it. The working class liked populism. And it really creates a powerhouse when they all get together. Hey, it's the 24th of June 2016 today. Yeah. And it's a beautiful day outside, and it might be a little humid today, but I got to turn back this audio a little bit. It's a little bit too high. I put another mic on here. Well, I think I'll leave it like this. I'll just get farther away from the mic. This is my other mic, and I think it works better than the one I've been using, so we'll see. I've been watching quite a bit of this footage of these financial centers around the world, and these guys standing there with their hands on their hips and on their mouths and arms crossed and everything, that they're in total disbelief that it didn't go their way this time. You know, I'm beginning to think this is all coming together along with the Merkel deal. That Merkel may have done us a good favor, and we thought it was terrible, and maybe she thought it was terrible, but with the economic turnaround and England pulling out, and I think there's going to be a domino effect of other countries going independent nationally, and that tied together with this crazy deal of Merkel promoting letting everybody into Germany and France and so forth, I think this is going to come to the 100th monkey. You remember about the 100th monkey? You know, if Hitler had the right kind of brains, He could have done this back in the 30s, last century. They could have made an EU of Europe with independent states, allegedly just like the United States. And that power of Europe would have excelled everything in the world. But when you go to the war thing and you start bombing shit out of things and destroying stuff, all the good stuff goes down the tube. But he had a chance to do it. He could have done it with minimal violence and military action. However, in this present deal, everybody shouldn't be patting themselves on the back too much, because the ruling class has tremendous power and follow the money, and it'll be eternal warfare. It never ends. You pass it from father to son and father to daughters and so forth like that, because you never can just say we won and go home. These guys, especially the economic czars, and partially to the religious czars, they're going to keep at this thing for a long time. Now look at England. Maybe they got rid of Brussels and the EU, but they still got the city of London, the big central banks and so forth in England. That's a big powerhouse for the economic elite, but it sure doesn't trickle down very much, and the people in Britain are being screwed out of their eye teeth in housing and rents and labor costs and so forth like that. So it's always going to be a struggle. So, but the trouble with white people, white Aryans, white Europeans, they fight one battle and they go down to the pub and start drinking beer and it's all over. That's not the way it works. It's continual warfare, economic, spiritually, naturally, racially. It's always going to keep going. It never ends. So if you think there's an end to this, I'm sorry. There's no end to this struggle. But we can have fun and party while it lasts. I got a big sign out in front of my house. Congratulations to the Brits from the white U.S. I'm getting quite a few honks on that. Cars going by the house this morning. Well, we'll celebrate this weekend and then get back to work, huh? How about this? Thinking about it, let me dig out my 100th monkey book. It's a great book about anti-nukes and what nuclear war will do to the world. But this deal about the 100th monkey, I want to read to you. The Japanese monkey, Macaca fuscata, has been observed in the wild for a period of 30 years. In 1952, on the island of Koshima, scientists were providing monkeys with sweet potatoes dropped in the sand. The monkeys liked the taste of the raw sweet potatoes, but they found the dirt unpleasant. An 18-year-old female named Imo found she could solve the problem by washing the potatoes. In a nearby stream, she taught this trick to her mother. Her playmate monkeys also learned this new way, and they taught their mothers too. this cultural innovation was gradually picked up by various monkeys before the eyes of the scientists. Between 1952 and 1958, all the young monkeys learned to wash the sandy sweet potatoes to make them more palatable. Only the adults, who imitated their children, learned this social improvement. Other adults kept eating the dirty sweet potatoes. Then something startling took place. In autumn of 1958, a certain number of Koshima monkeys were washing sweet potatoes. The exact number is not known. Let us suppose that when the sun rose one morning, there were 99 monkeys on Koshima Island who had learned to wash their sweet potatoes. Let's further suppose that later that morning, the 100th monkey learned to wash potatoes. Then it happens. By that evening, almost everyone in the tribe was washing sweet potatoes before eating them. The added energy of this 100th monkey somehow created the ideological breakthrough. But notice, a most surprising thing observed by these scientists was that the habit of washing sweet potatoes then jumped over the sea. Colonies of monkeys on other islands and mainland troops of monkeys at Takasakiyama began washing their sweet potatoes. Thus, when a certain critical number achieves an awareness, this new awareness may be communicated from mind to mind. Although the exact number may vary, the 100th monkey phenomenon means that when only a limited number of people know of a new way, it may remain the conscious property of these people. But there is a point at which only one more person tunes in to the new awareness, a field is strengthened so that this awareness is picked up by almost everybody. Your awareness is needed to save the world from nuclear war. You may be the 100th monkey. You may furnish that added consciousness energy to create a shared awareness of the urgent necessity to rapidly achieve a nuclear-free world. If I knew then what I know now, I never would have helped to develop the bomb, spoke George Kistakovsky, an advisor to President Eisenhower who worked on the Manhattan Project. Anyhow, this book was about the nuclear dangers of nuclear war. But that's the point I wanted to get across, is how I've seen this happen over and over, to where an idea just sit around and not too many people jumped onto it. And then all of a sudden, after so many people jumped onto it, one more person, or maybe two, jumped onto it and it took off like a bandit. That's why you're important. That's why individual thinkers and lone wolves are important. And you think that you're not getting anywhere, but you don't know, because it's a collective situation. You're talking your whole life about helping the white race. And it may come at the end of your life. It may not come at all until the next generation, but it'll come. But if you don't individually add your psyche to the program, it's surely never going to come. I'm convinced that's the ingenuity of the white race. Look at the automobile was invented at almost at the same time in almost every white country. The airplane was invented the same way. And I've noticed down through history all the technological jumps. They usually all happen in certain countries all at the same time or very close. So that's the way it goes, and that's not only eugenics racially, that's brain power, man. That's brain power. I'm very much into the clairvoyance and some of those things, and I know they work because I know it works within my family. And it worked in my mother's family and her mother's family. So there's something going on out there, and we either take advantage of it or we lose it. I think this whole thing going on over in Britain and in Europe is getting ready to come down on Hillary's head like a pile of rocks. I got the feeling that Hillary is not going to go too well in this election. In fact, I'm getting the vibrations all the time that she's going to get smashed if Trump calms down and just speaks with cold, hard facts. But there's something going on out there. There's something big going on out there. Here's a bit on 9/11. Lee Hamilton has always flinched at implicating important Americans and allies in crimes of state, citing the need for near-perfect evidence. But that has let complicit parties go unpunished, says 9/11 widow Kristen Breitweiser. And this is an article by Kristen. Tom Keene and Lee Hamilton wrote an opinion piece last week in USA Today trying to temper feelings surrounding the release of the 28 pages that were redacted out. Keene and Hamilton wrote, "The 28 pages have generated a lot of public speculation over the years and have been described as a smoking gun implicating the Saudi government in the deadliest terrorist attack carried out on U.S. soil." They go on to write, "What often gets lost in those theories is that the 28 pages were based almost entirely on raw, unvetted material that came to the FBI. That material was written up as possible leads for further investigation, and the 28 pages were a summary of those some of these reports and leads as of the end of 2002, all of them uninvestigated." What Keene and Hamilton failed to acknowledge is the reason the raw, unvetted material was left uninvestigated was strictly because of the 9/11's commission staff director, Philip Zelikow. Sounds like a good Jewish boy. Zelikow has too many conflicts of interest to list in this article. Suffices to say that a critical portion of the 9/11 commission's final report can be seen as merely a fairy tale rendition or intelligence story of the Zelikow's design. Scroll down to the lunch break, read Zelikow's next staff statement where he talks about the intelligence story. Indeed, Chapter 5, quote, "Al-Qaeda arms at the homeland," and Chapter 7, "The attack looms," provides most of the vital pieces of information surrounding the 9/11 plot by citing Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's interviews as their primary source. Why would any laudable historian, who Zelikow professes to be, base an official accounting of the worst terrorist attack since Pearl Harbor on the bogus ramblings of a detained, tortured terrorist? That's why anything and everything that comes out of Zelikow's mouth should be questioned for its veracity. After all, if the person in charge of torturing KSM wanted to obscure the Saudi role, is it a surprise that KSM would say that his torturer wanted what he wanted to hear? Moreover, is it a surprise that the person or persons in charge of KSM's torture who wanted to obscure the U.S. government's awareness of the threat and indeed specific knowledge of many of the terrorist activities before the attack would elicit a story consistent with that goal? Indeed, regarding the 9/11 Commission's treatment of the Saudi role in the 9/11 attacks, Zelikow's hands are easily found. Look at three items. First, Zelikow blocked and then fired Dana Lessman when she tried to investigate the uninvestigated leads in the 28 pages. Where were Tom and Lee when this happened? Second, it was only Zelikow and Dieter Snell who were granted access and able to question Omar Bayoumi, a man who stands at the epicenter of the Saudi nexus to the 9/11 attacks. Why were Zelikow and Snell the only ones permitted to interview such a key individual? Finally, it was Zelikow and Snell who rewrote the entire Saudi section of the 9/11 Commission's final report, leaving out all the damning, incriminating information. Where is that missing information today? Available to the public review? So please, when Keene and Hamilton say they found no evidence linking the Saudis to the 9/11 attacks, pay careful attention to the acute use of their words. Quote, found no evidence, because while concedingly there may have not then have been conclusive proof, there were certainly indications and evidence that required further and immediate follow-up. In addition, note that Keene and Hamilton talk about access granted to the 28 pages being given to relevant staff. Which staff were deemed relevant? And who decided that what staffers were relevant? Zelikow? Everyone had clearance, so why didn't all investigative staff have access to the 28 pages? Keene and Hamilton also proudly state that their report is unclassified and available to the public. What you need to realize is that while their final report is unclassified, the source documents for the report remain classified and hidden from the public. In short, unlike redacting reports where you can readily see what is being kept secret by the dark lines crossing out words, with the 9/11 Commission's final report, we'll never know how much other pertinent information was kept out and classified by Zelikow. Well, as far as I'm concerned, nothing should be classified. They should be totally vetted. And as someone who has looked for specific documents on the National Archives website, I can state emphatically that many of the 9/11 Commission's most vital and damning documents remain redacted, withheld, classified, and or unavailable to the public. Moreover, please pay attention to how Keene and Hamilton characterized the 9/11 review panel. Realize that the 9/11 review panel did nothing more than tie up the noose. Uncomfortable, damning ends that would inevitably be created with the release of the 28 pages. Was the panel's purpose to uncover the entire 9/11 story or to stop further inquiry that would eventually uncover the entire truth? Finally, I do agree with one section of the Keene Hamilton editorial. Quote, the 9/11 attacks were the worst mass murder ever carried out in the United States. Those responsible deserve the maximum punishment possible. Therefore, accusations of complicity in that mass murder from responsible authorities are a grave matter. Such charges should be levied with care, unquote. I just hope that both Keene and Hamilton mean what they say when they talk about those responsible and the complicit in 9/11 attacks, quote, deserving the maximum punishment possible, unquote. And I hope their definition of complicity is as broad as mine, by including actions before and after the crime, and actors from inside and outside the United States. For example, let's say that our CIA, or a rogue element of it, tried to recruit two 9/11 hijackers in San Diego, who were already in contact with Saudi agents. And in carrying out that task, the CIA worked with those Saudi agents in the recruitment process. And thus all the Saudi contacts and support for hijackers detailed in the 28 pages, the so-called smoking gun, necessarily reveals that the CIA's Saudi cooperation in dealing with those two 9/11 hijackers. Incidentally, they lived about 40 miles from my house. Incidentally, this might explain why CIA Director John Brennan has joined the chorus in stating that all information released in the 28 pages is uncorroborated, unvetted information, unquote. While Keene and Hamilton support holding the CIA officials accountable, will Coffer Black and James Pavette be held accountable? George Tenet? John McLaughlin? What about John Brennan? Or Michael Hayden, Bob Mueller, Richard Clark, too late for Sandy Berger and those docs he suffered in his socks. But what about Clinton, Bush, Cheney, Rice, and Obama? How about Zelikow and all the others who have known the truth for years and kept silent? When Keene and Hamilton say complicity is a grave matter, I hope they follow through on their word. Clearly, much will depend on how good a job was done by the 9/11 review panel. But putting that aside, I certainly hope the U.S. government does not expect the 9/11 families to ignore 15 years of their cover-up and capitalized opportunities in the wake of 9/11 attacks. Quoting Condi Rice, here in the immediate wake of 9/11 attacks, where she said, quote, "How can we capitalize on these opportunities?" Unquote. That's right, she called the mass murder of 3,000 innocent people an opportunity that should be capitalized on, unquote. Recently, we've seen that even though decades have passed since the Dennis Hastert committed his despicable deeds, he was eventually caught and held accountable for cover-up in those deeds. To me, this demonstrates that the truth will always emerge. Yeah, it may emerge, but he only got 15 months in prison. 15 months in prison. 15 years after the 9/11 murders, we have uncovered a part of that truth. Let us hope it does not take another 15 years for the whole truth to emerge. Rest assured, we will never give up, nor will we ever go away. Well, Christine Breitweiser is a 9/11 widow and activist who worked with other 9/11 widows known collectively as the Jersey Girls, pressured the U.S. government to conduct a formal investigation into the terror attacks on September 11, 2001. Follow Kristen Breitweiser on Twitter at www.twitter.com/KD Breitweiser. This article originally appeared as a blog post. Okay, there you go. We'll put that up on the website, too, because a lot of this stuff is great stuff. It never sees the light of day very much. Probably going to have about the same amount of luck everybody's had with the Kennedy assassination and the Robert Kennedy assassination and all the other crap that's been hidden under national security. I will declare no allegiance to a government that will not release pertinent information on major things to the people. We have no duty to show any loyalty to any government that does not expose this information to the public. It is their duty to do it, and if they don't do it, they must be considered straight-out criminal gangsters, and that's it. Now, Trump's never held office, but Hillary, the evidence on her being a complete, absolute criminal of the worst kind is so open and so much of it out there, it's unbelievable. But she promises enough to all these troglodytes and Untermenschen people that they'll go along with her no matter what. They don't care how rotten Bill Clinton was. They don't care. Boy, you gotta know somebody nowadays. Hundreds of Filipino villagers wearing capes made from banana leaves have covered themselves in mud in a ritual to a saint. The Mud People Festival in Bibiklat Village dates back to the Japanese occupation of the Philippines during World War II. The villagers believe John the Baptist saved some residents from Japanese firing squads during the war. Villagers say that Japanese troops had planned to execute male villagers in a Bibiklat Village church courtyard, but the residents prayed to St. John and a sudden downpour of rain saved them, according to the villagers. The villagers rolled in the mud in jubilation and have carried on the tradition ever since. The parish priest said on Friday that some of the mud-spattered participants wanted to thank God for blessings, while others solved personal problems during the festival in the northern Bibiklat village. Wow. Here's an announcement, boys and girls. Run for your lives. Run for your lives if you're Jewish. Violent anti-Semitic attacks in the U.S. rose 50% last year. That means there were two. According to the Anti-Defecation League, there were a total of 56 against Jewish victims. Wow. Oh, man. 56. you know, they even count, if you roll down your window and say, hey, Kike, that's a anti-Semitic attack. And we know that for every incident reported, there's more likely another that goes unreported, said Jonathan A. Greenblatt, CEO of the ADL. That's an interesting concept. In other words, for every murder, there must be 50 murders that are not reported. Which produced this study and calls the trend very concerning because we're not getting as much attention as we used to, man. We used to be able to put this shit out and everybody go crazy and cry and moan. They don't care anymore. They care about the Arabs and Islams and all those people. They don't care about us no more. The increase occurred is the total number of anti-Semitic or anti-Kike incidents, including physical and verbal assaults. Verbal assaults. Oh, ooh, ouch. That hurt. And vandalism. Oh. He dented my wheel cover on my new Cadillac. Remained fairly steady, rising 3% from 2014. Boy, now there's a story to wrap yourself around. Example of anti-Semitic assaults in 2015 include an assailant in Boca Raton, Florida, shouted, quote, Jews should go back to Auschwitz, unquote, and struck a rabbinical student who fell to the pavement. Wow. Two people walking home from synagogue in Brooklyn were pelted with eggs by four perpetrators shouting, you fucking Jews, I'm going to kill you. Oh, this is terrible, man. Two assailants approached a high school student wearing a yarmulke in Denver and yelled, hey, Kike, when I talk to you, you talk back, unquote, and threw a large rock that hit the victim on the back, denting his Armani suit. Overall, the number of anti-Semitic incidents is historically low, and we can't collect any money if they're low. We got to have some real juicy ones, then we can collect more money, according to the ADL, which was founded to combat anti-Jewism and other bigotry, and started tracking anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish incidents in 1979. Gee, imagine if you had tracked white crimes against white people. There wouldn't be enough room in the New York Times. The peak since then was 2006, when 1,554 incidents were reported. The general trend since has been a decline. And as in past years, more anti-Jewish incidents occurred in states with larger Jewish populations. Well, that's strange. How could that be? New York and California again led the list, followed by New Jersey, Florida, and Massachusetts. Wow. But the ADL report, its author noted, does not include most expressions of anti-Semitism within the explosion of it online and on social media in particular, where they call us kikes all the time. The report includes incidents of online anti-Semitism directed at Jewish person or institution, but not general expressions of anti-Semitism, whatever that means. The issue has grown exponentially in recent years because the internet provides racists and bigots with an outlet to reach a potential audience of millions, Greenblatt said. The ADL in future years plans to capture in its report more online anti-Jewism, which researchers tracked with the rise in political expression this election season. Oh, wait a minute. Neither one of the candidates for president are Jews. Well, supposedly. Another category in the current report that defies the longer-term general trend of declining anti-Jewish incidents is a steep rise in anti-Semitic incidents on college campuses, by ragheads, I mean by Islamics. Those nearly doubled from 47 incidents on the 43 campuses in 2014 to 90 incidents on 60 campuses in 2015. Wow. The finding dovetails with those of another recent report, which focuses entirely on the rise of anti-Semitism at the American colleges and universities, which coincides with the rise of Islamic crazies that are going to the colleges. A report from AMCHA Initiative blames supporters of the movement to boycott Israel as the primary agents of anti-Semitic activity on campus. Wow. You mean critical of Jews. Among the anti-Semitic incidents on American colleges and universities included in the ADL report, a student found a swastika and the word Jew taped next to his Israeli flag at Drexel University in Philadelphia. Call out the National Guard. The phrase Zionist should be sent to the gas chamber was found in a campus restroom and another university-owned building at the University of California at Berkeley. Call out the guard. Vandals spray painted swastikas on the exterior wall of a Jewish fraternity at the University of California at Davis. Anti-Semitism in Europe and the Middle East presents a yet larger problem, with anti-Semitism manifesting itself in more violence towards and even murders of Jews. Well, there you go. You got it right from the horse's mouth. You just ain't treating those Jews right. You got to know that you got to get down on your knee and genuflect to those Jews, or you're going to be called an anti-Semite. Yeah. How about this? Anti-LGBT bias means we're all responsible for what happened at Orlando. There you go. You people are all guilty. Don't try to lie to me. You are. Well, my old buddy Emmanuel Cleaver's in the news. He's a representative in Congress, you know. He was the mayor of Tulsa, I think it was, when Dennis Mahan and I were putting TV shows together, and he vowed to keep us off the TV. He did not want us to be on TV in Tulsa. And finally, he shut down the whole public access program for everybody just to keep us off. But he's back in the news again. Amid recent complaints of racial discrimination against black Americans looking to book rooms on bed and breakfast sites in Airbnb, members of the Congressional Black Caucus are urging the company's CEO to do something to address the issue. Chairman G.K. Butterfield, black Democrat, North Carolina, Representative Emmanuel Cleaver, Democrat from Missouri, wait a minute, did he move? Penned a letter to Airbnb Incorporated CEO Brian Chesky, inquiring into recent reports of racism and discrimination on a popular booking site. According to NBC News, the two congressmen are pressuring Airbnb to conduct a detailed review of racism allegations. As members of the Congress and members of the Congressional Black Caucus, we are committed to ensuring African Americans have the same opportunities available to any other group. Are you kidding? You want superior stuff. Okay, wait a minute. The letter reads, "And to that end, we write to share our concerns regarding the recent reports of the exclusion of many African Americans and other minorities from booking rooms on your site due to our and their race. We're unhappy, and we're the Congressional Black Caucus. Watch out. We're coming to get you." Well, the U.S. Senate narrowly rejected an amendment to a bill Wednesday that would have allowed warrantless government access to Internet browsing histories, and the fight isn't over yet. The amendment would allow federal agents to access phone logs, email records, cell site data, used to pinpoint locations and browsing histories of recently visited websites, all without a court order. Oh, yeah. Guess who's behind that? John McCain, the hero of Vietnam. The amendment was 2 votes shy of required 60 to move forward, but Majority Leader Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, who's married to an Asian woman, has submitted a motion to reconsider the vote following the defeat. There you go. It's gradually moving ahead. All your worst nightmare. Senator John McCain introduced the amendment to a Commerce, Justice, Science Appropriations bill earlier this week in reaction to the Orlando massacre, because he wants to get the vote of the homosexuals. It is important our law enforcement have the tools they need to conduct snooping and counterterrorism investigations and track lone wolves like Tom Metzger or ISIL-inspired terrorists who do not have direct connections to foreign terrorist organizations but who seek to harm Americans, McCain wrote on his website. McCain continued, my amendment would do just that by enacting the ECTR fix, which would allow the FBI to obtain non-content electronic communication transaction records to investigate suspected thought terrorists, and by allowing our law enforcement to combat lone wolves. To be clear, this amendment would not allow the FBI access to the content of private messages, but will only allow law enforcement to look at non-content electronic communications transactional records in the course of national security investigations. In other words, they can snoop wherever they want to. Don't let them shit you. There is no security. There is no privacy anymore. If you think there is, you'll be dumb. The American Civil Liberties Union voiced its protest of the amendment by noting that the lone wolf provision has reportedly never been used and would allow the government to obtain secret Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act orders for individuals not connected to an international terrorist group, like Terrible Tommy. Quote, the Senate should not respond to the massacre in Orlando by voting to gut Americans' privacy protections and expand provisions of the Patriot Act that have been consistently been abused by the government. Karen Johansson, ACLU National Political Director, wrote in a statement. Well, see, sometimes you got to support the ACLU because they don't always do bad things. The McCain Amendment would allow the FBI to collect Americans' most sensitive information, including the websites they visit and the addresses they email, without a court order. We urge the Senate to abandon this misguided effort, unquote. The vote went along party lines, as usual, with most Republicans voting in favor of the snooping bill. Remember that, Republicans, they're supposed to be, we love the Constitution, man. We're fighting for the Constitution. And most Democrats were against. However, 11 Democrats and one independent senator voted in favor of the McCain proposal. 6 Republicans defied their party to oppose the measure. So there's 6 Republicans out there that seem to have their heads screwed on right. You know what would be almost hilarious is to watch these stupid progressive liberal types, or whatever you want to call them, that always want to round up all the weapons, limit your firepower with the weapons, to suddenly one morning the government totally flips, or not totally, it doesn't have to totally flip, just flip a little and take and actually come around to take all the guns. And what if the government just takes them from the liberals? We are taking all the weapons from the Jews and the liberals and the progressives. We're not going to bother the fascists. Wait a minute. The dispute began, as so many do in the Washington area, at a red light. The signal went green, The first motorist hesitated, and the second motorist hit the horn. It ended, according to police in Montgomery County, Maryland, in a hate crime. Once the two cars started moving, police allege in court records filed Wednesday that the first driver got behind the second. She followed her into a parking lot and could tell that she was wearing a hijab or head covering, court records stated. The first motorist got out of her car, tossed baby oil on the other driver and her 17-year-old daughter, and according to the court filings, yelled, "Get the hell out of the country, you bastard Muslims." Wow. In an interview Wednesday, the first motorist strongly denied the accusations she committed a hate crime, speaking emotionally about Muslim friends she has had throughout her life. "My best friend is an Islamic." "This is outlandish," said Carlina Avilis, 27-year-old cook. "I'm not anti-Muslim at all. The Muslim religion is beautiful. I was just baptizing her with baby oil." She described the other driver as the instigator, blowing the horn, driving up to her, making an obscene hand gesture, and trying to spit on her from front seat of her car. In the parking lot where the argument escalated, Avilis said she told the driver, quote, "Go back to where you came from, because here we don't spit," unquote. The other driver and her daughter are of North African origin, and are American citizens. Everybody is. Everybody in the world is an American citizen. According to the Council of American Islamic Relations, a Muslim civil liberties group that has investigated the case, these guys copy their group right after the ADL of the Jews. The suspect is of Caucasian Hispanic descent. She is a half-breed and born in Maryland, according to her and to the court records. So how can it be a hate crime? She's not even white. Avilis was charged with two hate crime counts on Tuesday for throwing baby oil on that woman. She said she turned herself into the Montgomery jail, where she said a police officer told her this is a she said situation. Avilis posted $5,000 bond, was released, and said she intends to file assault charges against the other driver and her daughter. In an interview, she acknowledged following the other driver into the parking lot. Quote, "I just wanted to talk to them," unquote, she said. And she acknowledged that once in the lot, she pulled out a bottle of Palmer's coconut-scented baby oil and proceeded to baptize that Islamic woman and show her where Jesus was. "That was really childish of me. I mean, it was childish." Well, no, you were trying to introduce her to the spiritual world. But she added her insult about the woman's heritage was born out of traffic irritation, not religious bias. Quote, "I feel like I was just acting out of frustration," unquote. Quote, "I think she is saying what is convenient to say," countered the 17-year-old daughter who was in the other car. In an interview Wednesday, the high school student who asked not to be named said she clearly remembered hearing Avilis make anti-Muslim remarks. "It hurt," the longtime Montgomery County resident said, quote, "because this is the first time someone has ever said anything like that to me. Broke my heart." Interviews with Avilis and her 17-year-old daughter, as well as information in arrest documents filed by the Montgomery police, provide some details. You know, these cops are they're pushing these cops out there to give everybody hate crimes. They must be making more money off hate crimes in court. And lawyers, lots more lawyers. Let's see here. Well, I'm not going to go on with that. That story goes on for about two or three pages. What a waste of material. Well, a black woman's assault on a white bitch who yelled the nigger word in Harlem Deli wasn't a hate crime, a worker said. Wow. "It was about disrespect," a store clerk who witnessed the clash said Thursday. The 42-year-old victim, who is described as white or Hispanic, drew the ire of two young black women at the Straight Path Deli on Lenox Avenue about 11 a.m. in the morning Tuesday, because she jumped the line and ordered a grilled chicken sandwich as they were ordering their turkey sandwich, the deli manager said. Quote, they got mad because they were telling me their order and the Hispanic lady got in front of them, unquote, said the store manager, who was asked not to be named. Quote, that's when the argument started and they were arguing with each other, cursing each other out towards the back of the store. I was trying to make both their sandwiches at the same time so they can leave. But the dispute quickly became tinged with racial hatred, officials said. Quote, you white bitch, the black woman told the Hispanic customer. You don't belong here. Go back to your people, unquote. One of them then flung a beer can at the victim, hitting the victim on the head. Cops are investigating the incident as a bias crime. Yet the store clerk said the victim was also hurling out racial profanities. Quote, you guys are not going to jump me, the victim said. You niggers ain't catching me. Everyone in the store got mad because most of the customers were black, the clerk remembered. The profanities continued after the attack as the victim called 911 and claimed her attackers had knives. Wow. Quote, they're black, the woman told the 911 reporter. Only niggas act that way, unquote. No arrests, and another woman fled into a nearby... The suspect and another woman fled into a nearby apartment building as the victim called 911. No arrests have been made as of Thursday morning. The deli clerk does not believe the hate crime charges will stick. Quote, I don't think it was about that at all, he said. The attacker is described as 5'6", 110 pounds, with braids on one side of her head and the other side shaved. Weird. Her friend, who is also black, is about 5'5" and at least 180 pounds. She had her hair tied back and was wearing an orange T-shirt that said, I like Trump. No, no, you can't, no. A local and federal law enforcement agents, officials, hope to learn who set fire to an LGBT banner that hangs on the front lawn of the Albany Damien Center, a resource center for people living with HIV and AIDS. Albany police and the FBI are investigating the incident as a hate crime that occurred sometime between 7 p.m. Wednesday and 9 a.m. Thursday. Boy, boy, this is serious. Center officials were deeply saddened to find the banner had been vandalized. Not 2 weeks after the nation's most deadly mass shooting in U.S. history targeted a homosexual nightclub. In wake of the Orlando tragedy, it is very disheartening to have this happen in our local community. They burn a hole in our flag. We appreciate all the community support and love extended and stand in unity with our LGBT community during this time, unquote. The post prompted an outpouring of support from members of the community. It's terrible. It's terrible. They partially burnt that flag, you know. It been rebel flag, been okay. Or a swastika flag, but not our flag. No, that's not nice. Here we go. The Albany Center, housed in the First Lutheran Church, I wonder who's got the Second Lutheran Church, on Western Avenue, was founded in 1990 as one of the first AIDS drop-in centers in the nation, and today serves as a resource center to improve health, reduce stress, and increase the quality of life in a supportive atmosphere for individuals and families living with and affected by HIV/AIDS. Wow. Well, they burnt part of their flag, and it should be the U.S. military special forces take care of this shit. Well, a Spanish court has dismissed hate crime charges that were brought against Cardinal Antonio Canizares Lavera of Valencia, Spain, after he denounced gender theory. I don't quite understand that. Several leftist organizations had filed complaints against the cardinal, saying that his words had incited hatred against homosexuals. Under the terms of Spanish law, the formal charges required authorities to investigate the incident. However, after a brief investigation, a magistrate concluded that Cardinal Canizares was exercising his freedom of speech, and his words showed neither a criminal intent nor a call to hatred or violence. The investigation was closed. How about that? Remember that guy over in England who allegedly shot that labor representatives in the government over there? That was just a week or so ago. It said, meet the FBI informant who organized neo-Nazi gatherings attended by Joe Cox, murder suspect in the year 2000. How about that? Let me see. Thomas Mayer reportedly yelled out Britain first during the attack, which has been disputed. Witnesses say he never said that. During the attack that killed British parliamentarian Joe Cox last week, a reference to the far-right anti-immigration political party of the same name, which is pushing for Britain to leave the EU in tomorrow's Brexit referendum. In court on Friday, Mayer gave his name as Death to Traitors, Freedom for Britain. Cox was a vocal advocate for Britain to remain in the European Union. More information is coming to light about Mayer's ties to neo-Nazis in the United States and Britain. Meanwhile, a former paid FBI informant, Todd Blodgett, has revealed that he met Thomas Mayer at a neo-Nazi gathering that the informant set up in London in 2000. Joining DN is a Todd Blodgett who once worked with several leaders of the right wing, including Willis Cardo, who founded the Liberty Lobby, and William Pierce, leader of the neo-Nazi National Alliance. Todd Blodgett, I've met that son of a bitch. His father was a congressman, and he was involved. The one time I met him, he was going to buy all the skinhead music from Cardo that Cardo had bought from somebody else, I forget who. Todd Blodgett, he's still running around, as an FBI informant. Well, who knows what might happen. He's a rat then, he's a rat now, he's probably always going to be a rat. I think I met this rat Blodgett twice. It was during the period when there was a lot of activity going on, and I remember we were all dressed in suits at some big meeting someplace, and I talked to him, and he seemed flaky, and he still is flaky, it looks like. I don't remember where his father was a congressman at, but I think his name was Blodgett, but I never researched it. But so what? Even if he was a racist leader or whatever, so what? He didn't like the person, and he shot her, killed her, and but it could have been for 100 reasons. Maybe he would ask her for a date, and she turned him down. Who knows? Britain's EU referendum turned into a culture war. The divisions are savage and won't go away. British Jews are on both sides. How about that? Well, that murder suspect Thomas Mayer, who was shot the broad over in London, brazenly gave his name in his first court appearance as Death to Traitors, Freedom for Britain. Well, I agreed with that. Press reports about his past led many to suppose he was motivated by support for neo-Nazi groups and hatred of foreigners. Well, I think that when you say death to traitors, it should be taken care of in a, hopefully, a legal way. Bring them before a court and convict them and then hang them. Like all these war criminals like Bush and Cheney that need to be taken over to The Hague and taken care of. The immigration issue featured prominently in Thursday's historic referendum on Britain's continued EU membership, whose result at the time of writing was not known. Well, we know what it is now, don't we? Many Britons are deeply concerned about the EU's core policy of allowing anybody free movement to live and work anywhere they want in the EU. The unprecedented numbers annually migrated to Britain have already put huge pressure on public services. Yeah, because England's not that big, man, and they're coming in there by the hundreds of thousands, man. Give me apartment, give me job, give me food, give me wife. If migration continues at this rate, the situation will become unmanageable. Well, it's probably there already. Just like the Mexican situation here. Yeah. In addition, with illegal migrants, invaders camped on the French coast and being regularly smuggled across the English Channel by people traffickers, there's a great anxiety that the huge movement into Europe of people from poor and war-ravaged countries will funnel yet more into Britain. Well, I think that's going to stoke the coals, man. I think that's going to work. On the back of this already neurologic issue, that's easy for me to say, the Cox murder donated, wait a minute. Let's try it again. On the back of this already, I can't even pronounce that damn word issue, the Cox murder detonated some of the ugliest, most vicious, and exploitive campaigning ever seen in Britain. The killing was ruthlessly manipulated by pro-EU Remain side in hopes of turning a vote which had been slipping away from them. The Prime Minister David Cameron made use of the murdered MP's views to support Remain, praising her strong voice in the campaign. You see? Did he bring her to cause her death, or didn't he? Parliament was recalled from its recess for a special tribute to the dead politician. Most of them probably hated her guts. Something not done previously, even for two MPs who were murdered by the IRA. In Britain's highly charged atmosphere, voting Remain was presented as a way to honor Cox's memory. You see how these politicians are? They'll use anybody, any dead corpse, anything that they can use. They are such fucking bastards. They will, anything, you know, they'll use it. Worse still, those who supported Britain's exiting the EU or Brexit were blamed for creating toxic atmosphere that contributed to the murder. Because of their concern over immigration, they were repeatedly accused of promoting the politics of hate. You know, these left-wingers are good at that. They're excellent at that. Everything is hate. Hate, 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 hate. Which Cox was said to have been fighting. A Labour MP, Stephen Kenneth, said, "It's not a big journey from saying horrible things to doing horrible things." Oh, yeah? The Brexiters were thus smeared in their millions as racists and bigots who spawned neo-Nazis. Well, gee, I sort of hope they are. While some of this attack coalesces around a controversial poster showing a tide of invaders walking into Europe, it mostly insulted millions of perfectly decent British folk who are anti-Semitic. These are not anti-immigrant. They were merely aghast at the flood of people threatening to engulf Europe and are anxious that Britain should be able to control its own invader levels, you know. These concerns are shared by many recent invaders themselves who support Brexit. Wait a minute. Drita said Mitchell, the novelist daughter of the Grenadian immigrants, wrote in The Guardian this week that migration policy should be brought back under the control of democratically elected politicians in this country. So there you go. That's it, boys and girls, for today. This is Freya's Day, and that's it for me today, and I'll be back with you on Moon's Day. In the meantime, be careful. Spitting on the sidewalk could be a hate crime.